right. What's up, party people in the place to be? This is the first ever episode of Nerds from the Underground, brought to you by Street Level Floppies. I'm Johnny Alpha, host of Graphic Vandalism on YouTube, and with me is the president of the Frodo Baggins fan club, Fred.
Oh, wow, that's fucked up. Well, I didn't expect that. It's your boy, Comics Fred. You hear me on Indie Alley with my buddy, Andrew. On this episode, we're going to be talking about two trades that we're both very passionate about. We have The Boys by Garth Ennis, and we have Skyward by Joe Henderson, and the beautiful ass art by Lee Garbett. But before we get on to these two trades, Johnny, don't you have some Kickstarters you want to talk about?
Yeah, I got two in particular that I'm very fond of. First up, the second issue for Frank at Home on the Farm just went live on Kickstarter. This is written by Jordan Thomas with art by Clark Bent. This is a very, very smart, very creepy British horror comic. It's very psychological. It takes place right after World War I, and as a fan of history, I find that war utterly terrifying, and the creepy art that they use for it makes it even worse. I can't recommend this book highly enough. It's so good, so I would really appreciate if you guys would back that. And then the second issue for Crescent City Comics by Newton Villalobos with art by Giancarlo Bernal is also live on Kickstarter, and oh my god, this book is just so much fun. It's about a blues musician, voodoo sorcerer in the 60s, just kicking monster ass, and the art is beautiful. This Bernal kid from the Philippines, oh my god, he is going to be someone to look out for. This book is just gorgeous. So if you could look up those and back them, I would appreciate it. So would the creators, and they're both just such good, cool comics that the world actually kind of needs more of, in my opinion.
Yeah, those sound really good, man. I do have one Kickstarter that I want to shout out. It's The Grave. It comes out on August 19th. This is August, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, August 19th, and it's from David Taylor, The Grave. It's a really great book, man. I've read the first chapter. It's very Ed Brubaker style, writing crime noir. Man, it was so good. The first chapter, I can't wait for the 19th to come so I can back this, and I will be backing it. Johnny, are you ready to get on to The Boys?
Oh, yeah, man. You know I am. And The Boys is, this is going to hurt. In a world where costume heroes soar through the sky and masked vigilantes prowl the night, somebody's got to make sure the soups don't get out of line, and someone will. Billy Butcher, Wee Huey, Mother's Milk, the Frenchman, and the female are the Boys, a CIA-backed team of dangerous people, each one dedicated to the struggle against the most dangerous force on the earth, superpowers. Some superheroes have to be watched, some have to be controlled, and then some, sometimes, need to be taken out of the picture. That's when you call in the Boys.
The Boys is an amazing book. I mean, this book, you sold me on where you said a group of superheroes that need to be watched by a CIA. I mean, dude, just think about the stuff that's happening in the government and things like that. Like, just people with power doing crazy shit. And superheroes are flawed characters just like us. They put their pants on the same way we do. Man, I fell in love with Garth Ennis's writing. I mean, some people may think it's too graphic, too vile. I like it. I like the art is amazing in this book. I mean, the pictures of the Simon Pegg character, Huey, looks just like freaking Simon Pegg. I mean, from Hot Fuzz era. And I really enjoyed, like, is it Starlight?
Yeah, Starlight. The
Yeah, I really like her character because she's the only character that still believes in doing good. You get that feeling in this, you know, everybody else is abusing their power, just having a good old time, doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And I really enjoy her character a lot because she's basically Superman. What do you think about this book?
Well, I'm kind of touching on what you said, brought up. Not so much with the politicians, but like even before this whole Me Too thing blew out of control, like you always heard these stories about the movie stars and the big musicians and the type of way that they treated people that looked up to them or worked for them. The pants dropping and the favors, as they call them. And you know what I mean? And it's always been kind of a disturbing, disgusting, open secret about the universe. And it was just kind of neat to see somebody show it as graphically disturbing as it probably is for some of the people that have to go through it. So yeah, with what Garth wrote and the way Derek Robertson drew it, especially like in the first arc that we read, when they show the orgy with the teenage kicks and they're jumping from bed to bed, and they show just like how traumatized some of the girls look. It's powerful stuff. I mean, for a book that's pretty much hailed as like a dark comedy, it has its gut punches. The show goes a little further into the drama than the book does, but it's very present there as well. And I think it's beautiful. I remember when this book first came out, like I was a huge Ennis fan. I was like deep into his Punisher and everything else. And then I saw this and I was just like, dude, this is so amazing. And I was reading it and getting it issue after issue. And then one day I read Wildstorm is dropping this book. It might not ever be published again after issue 6. And dude, I was devastated. It's probably the reason why I have such a low opinion of Jim Lee as a creator, because he was so willing to jump in bed with DC that he let this masterpiece walk away. And basically he helped create an entire label by doing it, because Dynamite has lived a long life off of what they were able to get from running the boys. And, I just love that it's still something that people talk about. It made its point. It did it disgustingly. It's probably one of the most punk rock comic books ever, because it's in your face. It's spitting at you. It's screaming at you. And it's making you laugh every now and then. But it's also telling you that, dude, these things are wrong. These people are wrong. And yeah, they're using capes and stuff. But like, you can very easily transpose them with movie stars or producers or very well politicians, which I don't like to wade into those waters because that's a sticky situation of its own. But yeah, like there's several analogs that you could work the boys into, and it's powerful stuff for being something that's seen as kind of just gross out smut humor. You know what I mean? It's I'm very wowed by it, much like yourself.
Yeah, man, the whole book, like, I feel like I mentioned this to you. I feel like Dynamite outvertigoed Vertigo with this book. I mean, they missed out. This book has been, oh man, there's so much to take in. Like the shock value, just think about like the stuff, like if this book came out right now, how many people would be like how they did, what was it, Heroes in Crisis, when they took things out of context? They would have their way with this book.
This book would not be able to be ran nowadays, to tell you the truth. Just how many times that the main characters passive aggressively use homophobic slurs. It was very common in the early 2000s when it came out. Most people still said that stuff like, "Hey, that's gay," you know, and that's you can't say that at all now. And I understand, I get it, but it kind of takes away a little bit from artistic expression, but. Yeah, no, I don't think the boys could even be published as a new comic now. I mean, it'll always be looked back and seen as like this thing that was wonderful, but it's kind of like a movie like Caligula or something like that that got put out by a studio back in the day. But you can never see Hollywood putting it out nowadays, you know what I mean, at all.
No, not at all, because just think about, like, they're taking characteristics of a Homelander who's basically like Superman crossed with the little Captain America. He's even got the American flag on his backside, and he's doing the shady things that he's doing. Or like, we all get the other characters, like the Deep is basically Aquaman, you know, those type of characters. I what I really like about this book a lot is like, he takes swipes at the big two. I, you know, as an indie fan, that's funny to me. I like it because, you know, I'm wondering, you know, do these characters in the big two have a past like this?
You know, to tell you the truth, it's this weird thing that like those Brit Invasion guys have. Not all of them, like Morrison and a couple of them other guys, they dive in, they like to write about Superman and stuff. But like, you got like guys like Alan Moore, Garth Ennis, and Warren Ellis, especially, they do not like superheroes. They don't like the idea of them. They don't like the fetishism of them. And they try to find ways to make them look like normal people that can be seen as scumbags. They can see that they can virtue signal all they want, but they're rapists behind it all. And I think that's actually kind of cool. I mean, I don't want to read every book like that, but I see
Right.
you have Watchmen back there behind you, and I mean that's what kicked this entire type of thing off. That was the book that made this things like The Boys possible. And yeah, dude, Garth took that football and ran through three different stadiums way further than where Moore took it with The Boys, but it's still just as powerful in my opinion. You know what he's saying and what he's doing.
Right, right. Now, for, like, Garth Ennis fans, now, if you really dig this book, The Boys, do you have any recommendations that people should read besides, like, if they're into his books, like, that they might not know? Because, you know, we are an indie podcast, so are there some lower books that you would say people should read?
Yeah, I would say, like, if you've read, like, his Hellblazer and Preacher, and then you read The Boys, and you were like, dude, like, I want more of, like, this nastiness and this complete envelope pushing, I would say check out his book, The Pro, that he did. It's a graphic novella he did with Jimmy Palmiotti in a little bit before. I'm not sure exactly when it came out, but it's about a prostitute that gets superpowers, and she kind of joins a team like the Seven, and it's got a lot of the same type of beats as The Boys, but it's way more tongue-in-cheek. It doesn't get as... Actually, no, there are a couple parts where it gets as dramatic and brutal. So, yeah, no, The Pro's really good. And then I would say dive into his Avatar work. Like, if you read stuff like Crossed or Chronicles of Wormwood, Avatar did not tell Garth no. Anything that he wanted to put in a book, no matter how savage, disturbing, or disgusting it was, it made it into, like, his zombie horror book, Crossed, or into his book. Chronicles of Wormwood is much like a Preacher, only that there is no filter on it. It is... just his total nihilistic look at religion cranked to 15. So if you're looking for something like that, I'd definitely say check out those two books and The Pro if you want to see Garth just go his most innocentness, or however you're supposed to say that.
Yeah, no, those are some good recommendations. Yeah, you made a good point there with the filter and stuff, because I think I've read somewhere that Garth Ennis said that if his book The Boys had stayed with DC properties, that it would kept being cut and cut, and he wouldn't be able to tell the story, or it wouldn't last to, I believe it went 72 issues, if I'm correct.
I think the series itself, the main series, ran 60, but counting Herogasm, The Butcher and the Baker, and the couple spinoffs that they had, I think it did get into the 70s, 72 to 75, something around there.
Yeah, and he mentioned that it would never lasted that long, so good things do happen to those that get cut, because...
Yeah. Well, I mean, because the book was, it was selling well. Everybody was blown away by it, so when... you know, Wildstorm put out that, like, yeah, we're dropping this book out of nowhere for no reason at all because it doesn't fit in with the bed we're trying to make with DC. It was just kind of like, why, dude? You have a hit on your hands. I mean, yeah. I get that you guys want to be part of the DC family, but this is only slightly, at the time when the first arc ran, it was only slightly worse than his Preacher stuff was. I mean, sure, the book evolved and Boys just gets nastier and nastier as it goes. But when it got dropped, I mean, the first arc is kind of the most watered down, lightest part of the book. You basically are just getting to know these characters and you kind of see some of the kind of nastiness. I mean, it was with after the book came back that you got to meet the Tech Knight who humps fruit and, you know, all the really kind of disturbing, really shocking stuff that happens in the book happened long after Wildstorm dropped him.
Right. Yeah, man. Okay, I want to play a little bit of game. Like, I'm going to make a comparison with this book in a movie. For those that haven't read The Boys, if you're a fan of Boondock Saints, I would say, you know how the two characters from Boondock Saints, I can't remember the guys' names right offhand right now, but how they chase, like, the Russian mob and stuff.
Connor and Murphy.
Yes, that's how they chased the CIA, the Butcher, and his crew chased these characters throughout this book. It's amazing. They try to keep them in line, things like that. And if they have to kill them, they will kill them in these books. You see them very violently. I believe in the first, isn't it the first trade that we read here, somebody dies in this one. So, I mean...
Yeah. Yeah. It was an accident. It was the first fight, and the dude didn't understand, like, the compound that had been put into him and actually made him as super as the supers. And Yeah, somebody gets fisted
Yeah.
to death. But we get mortal consequences of actions and actual human drama because of it. Because even though the person that got dealt was so terrible of a person, the ramifications it had on the character that accidentally, murked him, it was actually really well done and really
Yes.
strong stuff. I mean, Innes is really good like that. Aside from when he's not doing his weird political satires or religious things, he does these really, really hard-hitting dramatic war comics that just gut you. So the guy is really good with emotional content, which a lot of people don't give him credit for a lot of the time, too.
Yes, I totally agree. Do you have a movie that you would compare it to, or?
I would compare The Boys to, like if Lloyd Kaufman from Troma Films tried to make an X-Men movie or something. Like it just because of how wild and how perverted parts of it get, it really kind of goes to I don't know if you guys ever see like Toxic Avenger or Terra Firma or other movies that Troma puts out, but The Boys kind of gets on that level every now and then. But it's not as camp as those films. I guess it's kind of an unfair, but I don't know, that's kind of how I would say it. Like, if you imagine Lloyd Kaufman actually making a movie with decent emotional content to it every now and then, I'd say The Boys is kind of like if he tried to do like a Watchmen.
That's true. Okay, so should we talk about a little bit about the TV show? Because that's the reason why we're doing this book, is because the TV show is on fire. It's probably like one of my favorite shows on right now.
I think we should keep it a little vague because I'm still seeing so many people that I know just getting started watching it, so I don't want to get into spoilers or later episodes. But since we just read the first arc, I think if we can compare it to the first couple of episodes, we should be gravy. I think that would be doable, right?
That works, totally works. And I will say, like, it because Huey is drawn like Simon Pegg is in the book or in the TV show. He's Huey's father. I really like how on the TV show they use Huey's anger, it's shown and he's having flashbacks and things like that, because of the death of his girlfriend. Which, I don't know, should we spoil that?
Yeah, I mean, like, dude, you get that in like the first 5 pages. I mean, it's done a little differently on the show. They're not at a fair and stuff, but it's pretty much done the same way with the same character and it's the main catalyst. I mean, it happens directly at the beginning of the book. But yeah, like, go ahead. I wouldn't say it'll call that a spoiler at all.
Okay, they're standing out. Well, on the TV show, they were standing out on a sidewalk, and the A train runs through her. It's a very powerful scene because the first time that I seen it, it kind of like the effects of the blood from her, because she basically explodes. Like, you don't even know she explodes if you're watching the TV show, and then the blood is dripping and it lands on Huey, and he's standing there holding her hands, just like in the book. That's the same right there, is him holding her hands, and he goes into major shock, and A-Train looks back. I think he says something totally different on the TV show, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he's kind of spun out and he's like, I can't stop, I can't stop. Which is kind of what he says in the comic, but in the comic, he just kind of does his normal catchphrase, you can't stop the A train, and just books it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah, that part was like that. There's a lot of differences, but that part right there, it kind of caught me. Like, it was powerful, and I thought it was like directed, like amazingly directed. Isn't Seth Rogen in charge of this one too, as he was in Preacher of Genesis?
He kind of helped get the funding and landed the studio, but the guy that's actually like show running the show is Eric Kripke, the guy he was the dude that ran Supernatural for all those years. So and if you watch Supernatural, you can see that Eric Kripke has been a Garth Ennis fan forever. Like that show ripped off Preacher and Hellblazer so much that you could see that this guy was dying to do something with Ennis, and it's kind of cool to actually see him do it.
And then one part that I was kind of upset that wasn't in the TV show yet that I haven't seen. I've only made it to, I think, episode 3. The butcher's dog wasn't in there,
Yeah.
but they referenced the dog because he looks, Huey looks in the back seat and he's like, "You got a dog?" And he's like, "No."
Yeah, no, I don't know why Terror doesn't make an appearance, but like, yeah, no, Terror's not in the show for some reason. I didn't get it, but at the same time, like, I don't know, maybe they'd have to CGI, because like, Terror was such an odd, I mean, it was like a bulldog, but I mean, like, he was so weird looking to like actually get like kind of have it look the way it was supposed to. It'd probably need to be some kind of weird CGI kind of, like, at least kind of CGI covered. You know, like, they just kind of made over, like, a regular dog, kind of did his face a bit.
Right.
Because, I mean, because he's a weird-looking mutt in the book. Yeah,
that is true, and he does the nasty. There's a lot of the nasty in the book. Not so much on the TV show that I've seen right away. They kind of downplay it. They kind of tone it down on the TV. But do you want to make any comparisons between the book? Or because I think you've seen a lot more than I have, so...
I'm going to keep it to the first episodes, but... Yeah, like what you touched on with the when Robin gets killed by A-Train, dude, the way that they filmed it with the slow mo and you just see the wind and like, oh yeah, that was really well done. In the comic, it's just kind of like, you know, she's there and the next thing you know, he's just holding the arms and there was really no kind of later they kind of showed Huey's emotion, but the kind of just quick, they did it a little better on the show in my opinion. Like you kind of saw the slow-mo, and then you after that's done, you watch what him realize what happened in his face. And I've never seen the kid that played Huey on the show before, but I was blown away. I was a little disappointed when I first saw him because I'm like, dude, he's tall and lanky. He looks nothing like. But then when I watched the show and I saw that kid act, dude, he's good. I thought that he played. And I was, like you said, Simon Pegg plays his dad. So it's kind of surreal in some scenes where you see Wee Huey sitting next to Wee Huey. I don't know, a lot of the show is, I'm not gonna lie, it's completely different than the comic. It's very watered down, it's very sanitized, it still got more graphic and nasty than I expected it to, but the key element is that the spirit of the comic book was there and the spirit of the characters were very well represented. The way that they brought the Frenchman in and the actor they got to play him was so good. I really liked Carl Urban as the Butcher. I thought he's always amazing, but he was so good in that. The one thing I was a little disappointed with is how kind of weak they made the female in this season. Like, she kind of gets her ass kicked all the time, and I'm like, dude, she's like the best character. Right. Like, why? But that's my only peeve I have. One of the neat things I think that they... Oh, no, that's getting too far ahead of the show. I'm not going to talk about what I was going to talk about. So, yeah, that's all I got to say. I was going to start talking about the Deep's character development, and that's way later.
No,
in the
but
season,
we can
so,
talk yeah. about like the differences in the comic book in with the Deep, because on the TV show, they use the Deep as A-Train kind of making the advances.
Well, they kind of split A-Train's bad behavior between... A-Train, the character itself on the show, and with the Deep. Because, you know, the Deep, as far as I remember, at least at the beginning of the comic book, he's just kind of, like, obsessed with money.
Right.
He's the one in the meeting that's always talking about, like, we need to merchandise it and stuff like that. And they actually didn't show him being one of the creep characters. That was all A-Train and Homelander, for the most part, and Black yes. Noir. So they, for some reason, they do that. They'll split up certain characters. Another thing about the show that you'll see, and I'm not really spoiling anything, but they try to make you feel sorry for A-Train a bit, and I didn't like that.
Yeah, that was a bad look.
Yeah, eventually they try to make you kind of feel bad for a couple of the characters, and I didn't like that. I thought that was a little too pandering, but... All in all, I have a few pet peeves from the show. Other than that, it was a good surprise. I rate it up there with stuff like Umbrella Academy and Doom Patrol for shows of books that I really like that don't really follow the book very well, but still come out as a really strong, mm-hmm. great thing of its own. I really appreciate it for that.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so do you have a favorite character that's written in this first arc that we read?
Well, I mean, like in the first arc, you only really get to know Huey and Butcher. But I will say, like in the book in total, my favorite characters are the Frenchman and the female. They're kind of always together, so like I count them as one, and they go from being like utterly hysterical, funny characters to just meat grinders, human meat grinders. They just decimate things. So yeah, I really like those two a lot.
Yeah, I would see the first arc of the book. They intro Mother's Milk, right? That's his name. And
Yeah.
to me, when you read further on into the book, he's kind of like Mr. T in a way. But like, there's points of him like he, if he's drinking something, he's not total bad boy, but like he's kind of like puts a coaster under things and things like that. He's got like different. He's entertaining to me. But I guess if I was going to pick someone just from this first, what, 5 issues, I would have to say Huey. I like what he does. I like, he's determined. He wants to make some changes, and he's out for some vengeance. He's off-putted in the beginning. He's not sure if he wants to, but he comes around to it because he starts to see that these characters aren't who they claim to be, and he wants to continue to work with the Butcher.
Yeah. He believes in the mission and the
Yeah,
message.
that's. I mean, this is a great book, and I urge everyone that if you haven't read it, you need to read it. Do you have anything else that you want to add to this book, Johnny?
Just that make sure you're of proper age when you read it. I don't want to be a stickler, but this book gets graphic and it gets nasty, and I wouldn't want anybody younger than 15 reading it, to tell you the
True.
truth.
And if you want to read a book that's, if you're 15 or under, the next book, Skyward by Joe Henderson, is a perfect book for those teenage kids. Do you have the solicit there, Johnny?
Yeah. One day, gravity on Earth suddenly became a fraction of what it is now. 20 years later, humanity has adapted to its new low gravity reality, and to Willa Fowler. And to Willa Fowler, who was born just before G-Day. It's pretty awesome. Who wouldn't want to be able to soar through the air? But there are dangers too, and not just the fact that with one wrong step, you could go flying off the face of the earth. Some dangers lurk much closer to home than she knows. From writer Joe Henderson, showrunner of Netflix Lucifer, and artist Lee Gerbett, Lucifer, Loki, Agent of Asgard, comes the story of one young woman's journey to find her place in a world turned upside down.
Okay, Skyward. Man, this book is amazing. We've been probably, I think issue 15 just came out a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago. It's ended for now. They kind of left the window open to for a return or a spinoff or whatnot, but this is probably one of the most beautiful books and one of the best first arcs in comics. I'm upset that it didn't win Eisner. Just recently, because this is one of the best teams, whether it's Lee Garbett's art and his facial expressions on the people in here, like how he draws like Willa the big splash pages when the gravity takes effect and people are like soaring away, or Antonio Favella's colors. This is probably one of the best colored books. I mean, I'm really into all the colors that he puts in this book. It's great. And not to mention Joe Henderson's writing. This book, we grow to learn Willa from the age of, like, what is she, maybe one in the beginning? And then we fast forward 20 years and just to see how strong she is in today's society. People are looking for female role models, and this is a great book for anyone that has a young daughter to, teach them that they can do things. Because Willa is strong. She's gonna save the world eventually. She shows that she's interested. She makes friends with a lot of people. She gets in some trouble in this book. I don't want to talk about everything because I want to leave you something to talk about, Johnny. But how do you feel about this book?
Man, I have a weird story for this one. Now, I wasn't actually very interested in it when it was running. I usually like feel energy when I like learn about a book, and this one didn't really speak to me too much. And then one day I went into my LCS and like there was nothing out. And you know, this is one of Image's $9.99 trades, so I was just like, you know, why not? Brought it home and I was blown away, man. I absolutely loved it. And like you said, dude, it mostly has to do with just how great of a main lead Willa is. She's snotty, but in a likable way. She's never bratty. Even when she kind of gets mean to her dad, you understand where she's coming from because her dad doesn't explain things well. And yeah, dude, she's crazy. Like she's a messenger. She bounces around in a world where there's no gravity. She's flying around and she uses a gun to propel herself further and higher than she's supposed to go, which could cause her to go through the atmosphere. But she don't care, man. She knows what she's doing and she's comfortable enough to do it. And then when you get to like when she does her spy thing and her friend lets her borrow the boots and she's up there with high society with the grab boots on, just being a dork. She's just such a cute, wonderfully written character. That's one of the things that really grounded me to the book, not to mention the art style. And then when I got to the scene with what the lightning storm looked like with no gravity, just that big water blurb floating through the sky. That was one of the neatest, coolest sci-fi ideas I've seen in a comic in a long time. I'd never thought of something like that. Never seen anything like that. I've read and watched sci-fi my whole life, and that visual just blew me the hell away. Like, I utterly adore it. I'm a little disappointed that it only ran 15 issues, but like you said, they left it open, and I think that they just did their entire pitch run. And to do more, they would probably need to take a long break anyways. And a lot of Image books don't survive taking that first long break from, you know, the first arc to the next one. So I think, you know, Henderson going and doing his Lucifer for a little while and then coming back and doing maybe another arc of this, because honestly, this book's only getting more and more popular. So I'm pretty sure it will make a comeback. And when it does, I think it's going to maybe help it get as good as big as something, maybe like not Saga big, but like Paper Girls big. Maybe it'll have its own TV show, because I like the show Lucifer. I don't love it. It's kind of a really bad adaptation of the comic, but the guy that plays Lucifer is so damn fun. I enjoy it anyways, but I would rather have Skyward as a damn TV show than ever get another season of Lucifer, to tell you the truth. Wow.
Yeah, this is a powerful book, man. I mean, I don't want to spoil like what happens at the end of this arc, but there's even like power in the part where I think she meets Mr. Barrow, and he was Nathan Fowler's partner before all this stuff happened. And the way that he, like, you know, he's the rich guy. He gets away with things, but then he, you know, he slaps her, or does he punch her? I can't remember. He does one of the two. And that was like very powerful. Like in the beginning, I think that's the third or fourth issue. And when I was reading this arc, I remember reading it, and the way that Henderson wrote him, he was a very likable guy in the beginning, but you knew something was up. And that happened, then immediately hated that character and hated him and continued through the 15 issues. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, he straight up gives her a right cross and then plays with her blood as it's floating in the air. Like, in a couple panels. And yeah, dude, like, they just show you that, like, dude, this guy is just a disgusting deceiver. Like, and they did it in a very simple way, an easy way. And, like, and it made its point brilliantly. Like, it just, you got hit with her.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? That's kind of how it
and
felt.
And then you got angry, like, you were, because this is a character you're rooting for, because you know what she's wanting to do, you know, to save the world and make changes to things to get back to normal. Because her whole mission in the beginning of the book is, you know, she mentions to Edison, like, what was life like before G-Day happened? And she wants to, like, make changes and be, like, just correct the things that her dad, I guess, would you say, wronged?
Yeah, well, in this arc, you'll get to all of that like at the end of this, and then further. But yeah, where you get to the end of this one, even with what he did wrong, you'll still get an emotional gut punch at the very end of this arc. I mean, like it's powerful, like you said. I've actually heard a lot of people compare this to Why the Last Man, and while it's not like such a hot button issue, like sexism and stuff, like Why the Last Man had. I think it's an apt description. I think for the type of story it is and the points that it makes, I think that that's actually comparable to Why, to tell you the truth. I don't think people are wrong by saying that at all.
Yeah, that is a good comparison. Do you have anything else that like totally stands out to you in this book? Like any favorite art, like character development?
I really like the way that Willa was so cool that you know, her friends were down to help her. Like she had a rich mm-hmm. kid friend that, you know, he kind of screwed himself out of his circle. You know, he likes her and stuff, but you know what I mean? But he was willing to do all kinds of crazy stuff for her. So was her, so were her other friends. And I thought that was really cool. You don't get to see, you know, that kind of stuff a lot with it, especially with some of the way that, especially the way men write strong female comics. Usually they make them, for lack of a better word, bitchy. And, you know, like they're hard to, they don't have very many friends. And I thought that was great that Henderson just did not run with that kind of normal, you know, stereotype. And, you know, Willa was a cool person. She had cool friends. She had, you know, a laundry friend that helped stick her out of buildings. And even her overweight friend, you know, like stepped up and kicked some ass to help her get out of a jam. And, you know, I think that that stuff's neat. I think that that's the kind of things that made this book, you know, kind of just really a fun journey, more than even more than its important messages and like the things that it hits really good on. I think that the friendships and the just how close the characters are to each other is something you don't get to see too often, especially in action sci-fi comics. So like that was something that really impressed me about this.
Yeah, and speaking of the laundry friend, one of my favorite panels, and I'm going to show my immaturity here, but I really laughed out loud. Oh, man, my book just closed. Was when I think there was like a classroom sex education or something, and the teacher was like, you know, a student asked a question like, let me get it right. Can a girl get pregnant if someone's junk is in the air and, you know, it floats in? I seriously laughed my ass off when I read that, and I still do because I'm immature, and I love that stuff. That's funny stuff.
And it's probably something that some doofus in school would actually say if we lived right? in a zero-gravity situation. I can literally hear some dude ask that. Yeah.
I would probably be that dude, actually. But yeah, I thought even, you know, during this time in this, is it five-issue run, he's, you know, Joe Henderson does throw in a little comedy here or there. You have to, you don't have to look for as much like that. You didn't really have to look for, but yeah, man, this is a great book. You see the relationship between Willa and her father in the beginning, and just you watch it grow and grow, and you understand that, you know, she's a lot like dad, and she's learned a lot like from dad. And she's a, like you mentioned, she's a little hard on dad in the beginning, but she knows how to get to him to make changes, because I believe dad didn't want to leave the house, the apartment, whatever they may live in. And she kind of clunks him on the back of the head like gangster and throws him in a duffel bag just to get him somewhere else, because she knows that he's not going to budge. So she took it upon herself to do that. And
to right. protect him too. Like not so she could like sell him out or force him to go to a movie or something. Like she was like, dude, guys are coming to the house to kill you, and he's like, oh, this is my, and she had to knock his ass out and throw him in a hockey bag to save his stubborn ass, which
yeah. So that, I mean, in this book is, it's so powerful, like the things that they're dealing with in this book. Yeah, man, this is one of my favorite books that came out in the past year. You know, it's up there with Crowded, it's up there with what's the other one that I can't think of right offhand? Brain fart, I'm getting old. Yeah, I'll just say Crowded for now, but this one's right up there. I'm really proud of the work that this team's done. I'm really proud to cover this on multiple podcasts, and now we're doing a trade here, and I'm sharing this with you. Do you have anything else that you want to add to this book?
Well, just that, like, I also rate it really high. It was in my secondary best of 2018 video, along with other amazing, wonderful books like Infidel and Zojaquan from Vault and Death or Glory, a couple other really kind of badass strong female comics. I, for some reason, I didn't mean to, but if you watch that video, it's all it's a list of just tough girl comics. But yeah, no, it's kind of something that I'm really digging, and I'm really liking that people are doing it well now. They're writing the characters likable, more than that, lovable. They make it so that like, and you know that's powerful stuff. Like I'm kind of burnt out on the Jessica Jones type characters, the ones that are broken and sullen and hard to like, hard to even care even a little bit about. So when I got to meet Willa, I love her. You know what I mean? Like, and if they do a TV show, they better get somebody adorable to play her. Somebody that's just, you know, utterly lovable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's absolutely. One last thing I forgot to add for the people that haven't read this book, Willa and her family is people of color. So that's another huge selling point because we need more diversity in comic books, and she's definitely one of those strong female leads that's a person of color that's, you know, you can kind of like see yourself in, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, I read a lot of comics about and by people of color, so it's not really a new thing for me, but like for people that might be new to that, then yeah, this would be a good one to kind of get in and see that like they're just like us, right? People, there's nothing to be scary about. Don't listen to what other people on YouTube have to say. Like, people of color and comic books about them are excellent. They're really well done, and they're just like us people. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Think
I'm just trying to like I was trying to find the words to like put it, you know, eloquently, and you know, I can't really do that.
Yeah.
Oh, city boy. We're not, public schools didn't really help me much, but yeah, you kind of saved me there. So how about, since this is our first podcast together, you and I, we take this last couple minutes and we're going to talk about what writers we like or what books we're enjoying right now. Something like, just tell the people like what you're into.
Okay. Oh, well, right now I am, like you mentioned earlier, I'm into Crowded. I love Crowded. I think it's great. Actually, all the stuff Sabella's got right now is really good. Also really like his book Test from Vault. That's really cool. It's very cyberpunky. Why the Last Man mixed with Ellis's, what's it called? And now you got me brain farted. Desolation Jones. Let's see. I'm also really loving Resonant from Vault. That is just an amazing survival horror comic. Just brutal, really good, well written. Actually a lot of stuff, basically everything Vault has out right now, I'm loving and enjoying. And then Coffin Bound came out this week, the first issue of Dan Waters' new grindhouse horror action comic. It's so good.
Yeah, if I was gonna pick some books, I'd rather stick with the writers, because some of these writers that I read are multiple books. So I'll just say the guys that I really like and enjoy to read is, like you mentioned, Christopher Sabella. I enjoy Brian Edward Hill's writing. I enjoy Jeff Lemire's writing. Cullen Bunn, because I'm a huge horror fan, especially in comics. Not so much in movies, but comics, I really enjoy it that way. And he just had Black Manor come out, where he was with Tyler Crook from Harrow County, which was amazing. We just covered that on the Indie Alley podcast this week. Two publishers that I really recommend checking out, I would say, is Aftershock. I'm a huge fan of Aftershock, and I'm a huge fan, like you mentioned, Vault. I'm a huge fan of both of them. Actually, I have right here on my table, my Batman table, the Vault hat, because I represent. That's how I roll. yeah, man. Now, what else can we add in here at this end?
Talking about Brian Hill, have you read his book Bonehead? Since we just got done talking about Skyward, it's very similar. Yes. You read Bonehead? Okay, yeah, that wasn't that so awesome. Like, that they should actually do an animated series or something for that. That was, I can't believe that only did one arc. Bonehead was awesome.
I'm a huge fan of all his Top Cow stuff with Matt Hawkins, whether it's that or isn't Cyberforce and also Postal, right? He's doing Postal Deliverance is out right now.
Yeah, they're finally doing a new run of Postal, which is long overdue. I was so bummed when I thought that got canned, because I was reading the hell out of that and Nailbiter. They were just two really solid, like, noir-y horror books that Image had out, and they both kind of went away at the same time, and I just was like, it hurt, you know what I mean? I was just like, why are you doing this to me, god damn it?
Yeah.
But, and then also what we were talking about, Bun, dude, how many books has that guy done this year? He's put out like 20
Yeah.
comics this year, and they're all so good. I cannot believe the amount, the volume of work that that kid has done. I mean, I swear he's bucking to have his name put in the dictionary right next to the word prolific. I mean, you look up prolific, and it'll say Colin Bunn, because that kid is
I think he's the best horror writer in comics today. I think
yeah.
I think I've tweeted multiple times that he's the king of horror.
Yeah, he's a deaf contender, because like the cool thing about him is like he'll do like really haunting, creepy stuff, but he never does gory stuff, which I personally enjoy, because I do love gory horror, but I like that he kind of keeps his stuff more on a folk level and more kind of etheric and creepy. I kind of appreciate that about his work in particular. I think that, especially Harrow County, you mentioned that earlier, and oh my god, wasn't that just one of the amazing series Dark Horse has had in the past
it's
decade?
a great book, that's for sure. And now you just made me think of a book, Infidel, which was amazing, but that's not him. But that's another great horror book. I'm not on the horror podcast right now, but I just thought about that when you were mentioning books.
Yeah. Infidel is unreal good, man. Porn Sack Pikachu, I think is how you say his name, man. That dude is a
Yes,
good writer.
it's a great thing, and it deals with, you know, people's stereotypes of certain things, and it's a great book. It's another powerful book and some amazing art too.
Oh god, yeah. And then the neat thing about that one is that he actually addresses both sides of arguments in it, and he doesn't actually draw
Right.
a conclusion. He just kind of shows you that, hey man, like, you know, it's okay to think this and think that, but hey, think of this too, you know. And that's why I love that book so much. It didn't preach at you. It kind of explained itself and just kind of expected you to kind of, you know, like, just think about it, you know what I mean? We're not trying to force you into anything.
Right. Yeah, and that's a great book. And man, I can't believe that we vibed for this long so far, and it's our first time. Seriously, this is the first time Johnny and I have been on here. One other time we have, but it was with other members of the group, which you eventually meet in the upcoming podcast. But man, I've had a lot of fun doing this. I say we call it a night. What do you think? All right. I don't have a catchy catchphrase. Peace out.